those things that panic people. What happens if it doesn't work? At some point, we have to step over that line. If you want to build muscle, we don't grow muscle, you have to work that muscle to failure. Because in the moment of failure, it grows. And I think it's such a great metaphor for ourselves. If we want to grow, we can stay in our comfort zone and be safe and do reasonable work. Don't get me wrong, you can do good work. But if you want to grow as a therapist, if you want to grow as a person, you have to work to failure. You have to get to that point where something fails. Because in that moment is the moment we gain that extra strength. We gain that extra knowledge.
Every time I finish a podcast episode, I think that was my favorite episode. And then I record another one and I think that was my favorite episode. I think they're all my favorite. But today's is particularly near and dear to my heart because I'm interviewing one of my dear friends, Freddie Jacquin. I feel like Freddie needs no introduction, but just in case you're new to him, he is the author of the book, Hypnotherapy, Methods, Techniques, and Philosophies. It's an amazing book that I highly recommend reading or ideally listening to on Audible because he reads it himself and you can be hypnotized by the great Freddie Jacquin as you listen. Freddie is also the creator of the Arrow Technique, which has gotten thousands of people, probably tens of thousands of people out of pain around the world using a rapid technique that is so effective. Freddie is also the founder of the World Quit Smoking Project, which has been translated into many languages because Freddie has a vision of helping people all around the world stop smoking for good. In this podcast, you'll hear Freddie reference Victoria, and he's talking about Victoria Gallagher, who was our guest on the second episode of this podcast. It's a powerful interview that has gotten amazing feedback, and I highly recommend you check that one out as well. You can find that at trancypants.com/podcast. That's trancypants.com/podcast. There are a couple of visual references in this interview. So if you're listening on audio only, you're still going to get massive value. And if you want to see what we're referring to, you can find the video of this conversation at trancypants.com/podcast. You'll be able to watch Freddie actually demonstrate hypnotic phenomena with me during the interview. And then Freddie gives us a sneak peek behind the scenes of his recording studio, which will provide a really valuable mindset shift if you're the kind of person who thinks that you have to have a beautiful, perfect space before you can start making a difference for other people. I really believe this interview can be life-changing for you if you truly listen with an open heart and an open mind and realize, yes, we are talking to you during this interview. If you listen to 5 minutes anywhere in this recording and really apply it to your life, it will change your life. I hope you love this episode as much as I do. I would love to hear your comments if you enjoy it. Have an amazing day. The thing I really want to convey, there have been so many people coming to me, and really for like 2 years, people have been coming to me saying, I want to do what you're doing, but ... And it's always the same thing. They have this voice in their head telling them they need more training. Freddie's going to get mad if they use his stuff. They don't have what it takes. Just all these disempowering beliefs. And so more than anything, I want to help people understand that it's okay to take action. That to me, if they've read your book, if they've taken one of Melissa Tears trainings, if they've taken Mike's training, they have everything they need. And now it's time to start moving forward. So I'd like to address that. And then anything that comes up, I think that whatever is supposed to surface will, and I say we go with it.
Yeah, so we can talk about this because I think it's an absolute point that you're making at this point in time. Even I have it. I have a Facebook profile. You know, that's what we show to the world. And it's what people perceive about me. And I've said that all along. You know, when I got to Las Vegas, not the last year, the year before, and my son booked an hour presentation on the Sunday evening. And I said, is it worth going for 5 days to Las Vegas, traveling all the way there for 5 days for an hour presentation on the Sunday? I said, no one's going to know me. No one's going to turn up. I said, it's going to be worth me going. And we had an Arrow product out, I think, just before. Oh, he said, yeah, it'll be great. You know, you'll be all right. And it's Las Vegas. You might as well go and have 5 days in Las Vegas. So I went. And all through the week, I'm talking to people in the bar and I'm saying, you know, come and see, you know, I'm on a Sunday at 6 o'clock or whatever it was, thinking I don't want to be in that room on my own at all, you know. And I said, you know, maybe if you're not doing anything, you know, maybe you want to come along. Thinking I might get 2 or 3 people if I talk to enough people. And then I got to the time and I walked down the corridor, you know, the big sort of meeting place in the middle between all the rooms. And there's this mass of people at the end of the hall. And I'm thinking, well, someone really good must be on here, you know, because there's a lot of people. And I thought everyone would be flying home at 5 o'clock. And so they're queuing up down the corridor. So, and I didn't know that Scott Sandlin was behind me. I didn't know he was, I don't think, at that point in time. So I'm walking down and I'm saying, you know, who's on? Thinking, if there's someone really good on, I've only got 2 people, I'm going to go and watch this other person. And then I said, well, we're waiting for you. And I couldn't believe it. You know, and I said to Scott, because he had this kind of party afterwards, and I said, you know, I was just absolutely amazed. He said, well, people know who you are. But I had no concept of that. And I still find that a really hard thing to sort of get my head around when people, you know, they're almost like timid to ask me to sign the book. Can I have a picture taken? Because it's not how I see myself at all. So that whole thing you're saying about the imposter syndrome of, you know, what we say to ourselves and what sometimes, and it's not just with our work, but in life in general, we've got to recognize that we look in the mirror and we are going to see everything that's wrong with us. And that's not what other people see, but we are going to see it. And sometimes we have to accept if enough people say you're good or you're nice or you're kind or you're brilliant at what you do, you have to accept it because you are not going to, it's rare that you are going to find, oh, I believe everything that someone's saying about me. Someone said only one person has said something bad about you and you'll hold that you will grab hold of and that will destroy you if you let it. But you can have thousands of people telling you that you're great and brilliant, but it's never really what you think about yourself. So I think it's the same for everyone. It's not just, I don't care who it is. They're gonna suffer that imposter syndrome at some point, that little voice going, yeah, you know, you're going to get found out. They're going to realize that you're not any good.
Yes. Yes, I think that voice talks in all our ear. Can you talk a little bit more about accepting, you know, accepting people's compliments, accepting that we're ready to take action, even though it doesn't feel like it?
Well, I think the idea of taking action, you know, you often say to me, you know, you have an idea and you do it. You know, maybe that's not the best way of planning something because I get excited and I get passionate. I have a dream. I think, oh, well, I'll do that tomorrow. You know, I'll get up and create something and then put it out online. And before I know it, I've set up some kind of course or something without even thinking it through, really. But I think it's, for me, it's just about not being afraid to try stuff and fail at stuff. And then you can go and do whatever you want to do. It's the thing that holds us all back. And it's that voice, the one that says, well, what if you mess up? What if nobody likes it? What if this? What if that? And once you get past that, and I think it's more about, it's not caring about what people think, but it's not worrying too much about it. You know, not letting that rule your life. I often have people come and see me and I talk about what I call mind reading. You know, well, everyone's thinking this of me and they'll be thinking that and she'll be saying that and he must be thinking that. And I said to a person, I said, are you Darren Brown? They went, no. I said, well, how do you know what people are thinking? Even he doesn't know in reality. But we do it all the time. Well, they'll be thinking this. If I mess up, they'll be thinking that. And that stops us from doing that. Once we recognise that voice and once we recognise and remind ourselves that we don't know what people are thinking, then we change our lives. That's my feeling on it. But you, like Victoria was saying, you know, we do this stuff. We're helping people all the time. I like to think I'm helping people all the time. People read my books, people come and see me, people do the training with me. And I'm saying to people, you know, but you can do this. You know, you could get yourself out your own way and then you can do what you want to do. And then you find times, like Victoria was saying, You know, she had that 18 months, done all that self-development and was teaching other people how to do it. And yet she wasn't practicing the stuff herself. She wasn't using the same techniques on herself. And that's a really important point. When she said that on that podcast, it made massive, you know, we have to keep doing our own work and keep upgrading our own selves and reminding ourselves that we can do the stuff, not just saying it to other people and helping other people, but reminding ourselves and to do the work on ourselves. And I thought it was a really good point of this.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. So are you telling me, Freddie, that all these years you've been doing hypnosis that you haven't arrived yet? Are you still doing the work?
I'm just hoping I last long enough to arrive wherever that point is. But, you know, instead of thinking about, you know, arriving, I just think you've got to enjoy the journey.
Yes.
And hope that you never arrive, you know, that this goes on. Because I've been doing it for so long and I'm still absolutely fascinated by it. And I'm still passionate about it. You know, and you only need, you know, you've helped hundreds of people, thousands of people. So has Victoria and so have I like to think. But when one person says to you, you know, my pain's gone, or, you know, I've lost weight, or, you know, thank you, I've quit smoking, or whatever it might be, or I no longer have that fear or anxiety. If we were only to help one person in our life, that would be a massive thing to do. Mm-hmm. And the thing about, like, Victoria, she's written these books, and it's the same in my book. And that's one of the reasons I wrote that book. And it was always been a dream of mine. I've written a couple of novels as well. But to think about the fact that someone you're never going to meet has benefited by the words you've written down. You know, I remember listening years ago to a guy, it was years ago, and he'd been brought up in this little mining village in the northeast of England. So he'd never really gone out of this town. You know, he'd lived there, but he wrote a song. And he sent it off to London and they gave it to a group and it became the number one best-selling song. So they invited this guy down to London and he'd never been to London before, never been on the tube before and on the underground. So he said he's in London, he's on this underground, tube train, and it's only him and one other person on this carriage. He said, and he was whistling my tune. If I had hair, it would be standing on end, because that gets me every time to think, you know, that he suddenly realised that his song, people were singing it, people knew that tune. And it was the same when I went to Las Vegas to the HGL for the first time. I got there, and obviously the other side of the world, so it's a long trip. I get there, and a man comes up to me in HGL, and he said, "You're Freddie Jackman." I said, "Yeah." He said, "I've got your book." He said, "My mum has been in pain for 20 years and I ran your arrow technique with her and she's out of pain." Wow. You know, it's phenomenal, isn't it? You know, to think that's just one man. I get emotional thinking about it. But, you know, that book's been selling worldwide and people love it, which I'm really pleased about. But they're also using the techniques. A guy today, and I was telling you earlier that I've been doing these 15-minute consultations today, free consultations. Which I'm offering people is come and, you know, speak to us. If I can help you, I'll help you. We'll book some appointments together. But the last one today, he made this appointment for his wife, but his wife never showed up. And he looked like he made me a mechanic because he had overalls on. But he was going on about my book. And I said to him, I said, "I've written that book so people can learn how to do hypnosis and do this work." I said, "Why don't you just... Right," I said, "you've listened to my book enough times," and he was raving about it. I said, "do it with her." You know, that's the whole point of that book. It's not that you read the book and then you book the appointment with me. The whole point is that you could pick that book up. That's why I've written it in that way. You could pick that book up, learn a simple induction, and then run one of those techniques, which is not wordy. You know, I'd love to think in some ways that she doesn't book with me, but I get a message saying, you know, spoke to my husband and I don't need you because my husband's hypnotized me and I haven't got the pain anymore. But, you know, that's the joy of what we do. And it's touch, like what you do, what Victoria does, you know, her book is going to people she's never going to meet, mm-hmm. who are being inspired and are changing their lives because of it. And sometimes we have to remind ourselves of that. you know, when our in our darkest moments, and we all have them at times, you know, to think that those people, it's a ripple effect. You're dropping a pebble somewhere and it's rippling out. And when we work with anything, whether it's weight loss or smoking, which people kind of in this, some people in this hypnotherapy world go, oh, well, it's smoking, you know, I don't do smoking. You know, it's so common. No, you know, you change one person's life out of smoking, that's going to affect their family. And it's probably going to affect the generation after. Because the chances are, if the father's not smoking, the mother's not smoking, the kids aren't going to smoke. And so it ripples out. And sometimes we can get a bit blasé about what we do. Because, to some extent, it's something anyone can learn to do. And you've seen me work, and I'm saying to people that these techniques are simple. And I want everyone to learn how to do it. The problem is, in our hypnotherapy world, if you like, if everyone can do this, and I'll put my hand on my heart, and I reckon someone who wants to learn it, I could take someone off the street who's never done hypnosis before, and I could work with them for a day. By lunchtime, they'd be a competent hypnotist, and by the evening, they'd be able to help people out of pain, fear, and probably habits. And I know I can do that in 24 hours, and it's a big thing to say, but I know the techniques I teach are simple. And I want everyone to learn how to do it. But the problem with that is, if everyone can learn how to do it, where's the kudos in being a hypnotherapist? If it's complex, if it sounds complex, if it is, if they make it complex. I spoke to a woman the other day. She's on a 3-year hypnotherapy course. And I've worked with, some years ago, I was traveling to Hull, where I live now, or I live the other side of Hull. And a woman phoned me and said, could you come and see me? She was in Lincoln, so it was on my way up. So I stopped to help her, and I did some hypnosis with her. And it was lunchtime. She said, do you want a cup of tea before you go travel on? I said, yeah. So we're sitting having a cup of tea together. This woman's daughter came in, and she said, oh, I'm doing a hypnotherapy course at Nottingham University. I said, oh, that's great. I said, how long have you been doing it? She said, 3 months. So I said, well, how many people have you hypnotized? So I haven't hypnotized anyone yet. We haven't got to that yet. I said, how many times have you been hypnotized? So I haven't been hypnotized yet. It's 3 months into this course. So I said, well, can I borrow your arm? And I lifted her arm up and hypnotized her across the table. So, you know, she's sitting there, can't move her arm. She's looking at me, eyes open. I said, now you're hypnotized. And it blew everything she'd been learning out the window when we realized that this is something that's happening all the time anyway. When I was in India last year running some courses with my son Anthony, one of the guys in India, he said, we're either being hypnotized, we're hypnotizing, or we're in hypnosis. And it's true. You know, everyone is in, once we recognize we're in trance, albeit some of them negative trances, which is what we're talking about with the imposter monster, where we've got this voice in our head going, you can't do it, you can't do it. You know, you'll never make it. You know, what's the point? Who cares? All those little phrases that go on in our head. Once we recognize that it's not even our voice, once we recognize that most, if not all of our limitations are being suggested by someone else.
Yes.
And when you recognize that, and then you think, well, okay, well, it was only ever someone else's opinion. It was never real. And then we can decide what we want to think and how we want to feel. I just see this as so simple now. What if I believe something else? What if the belief I have about myself, I could recognize it for what it was. It was only ever a belief. It was only probably someone else's belief, never mine. And I can change it. I can decide to believe something else. And I honestly believe all of human change can be done like that. One of the things that I've been using a lot, but it's occurred to me maybe in the last year or so, that it is the suggestion. You know, I do a lot of phenomena, you know, where I stick people's hands together. It's not for no other reason other than give people an experience of hypnosis. It's not for anything else. But I want my client going out of my room knowing they've had an experience of hypnosis. Trust me, for first 5,000 people I saw, I was doing what we now call relaxotherapy. You know, relax. They'd be sitting in a chair thinking, don't think I'm hypnotized. If I open my eyes, oh, no, I'm not hypnotized. I don't want to embarrass him. So they'd be sitting there thinking, I think I'm hypnotized. I'd be sitting in a chair thinking, if I move, they're going to wake up. You know, and we'd both be sitting there like that. You know, then you realize that nothing to do with sleep or anything else. And once you realize that, but I did that for years. So it wasn't until I started introducing phenomena, because you can go to counseling, you can go to, you know, all these other talking therapies. And if someone comes to see you as a hypnotherapist and all you're going to do is talk to them, albeit with their eyes closed, they're thinking it's just another talking therapy. But if in the first few minutes you find an excuse or a reason to demonstrate some phenomena, I can't pull my hands apart, then all of a sudden their expectation is much greater. So I'll always use phenomena in the therapy realm. And it's, I say, it's for that reason, to demonstrate that. But people won't do it because they're afraid, what if it fails? Then I've lost this client. You know, if I do it and they go, oh, well, it didn't work. You know, what's the point of that? But you've got to, my belief, we, as hypnotherapists, you see me present. And the difference between me presenting and a lot of other people who present is I say, if you want to be free of pain, come up. I don't test them. I just say, come up. I might have 30 people on stage and I'm going to do some phenomena with them. And that's what people, I want them to have that, wow, you know, that fascination, which we should all have when we're working with hypnosis, because it's fascinating.
I just interviewed Melissa Tears a couple of days ago, and her key points were that it's easier than you, it's simple. Once you just understand how simple it can be. And I think that's the hardest thing to convey to our clients. And I think that's the hardest thing for us to accept as hypnotists, is that it really can be this simple. And then the other thing you talked about was just being in this state of wonder and curiosity and always learning and exploring. And I think that's one of the most powerful states we can be in. So you mentioned a moment ago that sometimes, you know, when you're telling people you need to employ phenomena during your sessions, you know, these convincers to help them realize something happened. What would you say to that person who says, well, what if it fails? What if I can't really do that? Who aren't really sure that they totally believe in this stuff?
Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. People are doing great work without using phenomena. I'm not saying everyone should use it. I'm saying that I think it would improve their results if they use it. Because, you know, I want my client to go out of that room with an undeniable experience of hypnosis. You know, they can't go, well, yeah, I don't know if I was hypnotized or not. If they're sitting in a chair like this, can't move, looking at you. because people, it's just human nature. People, and as I said, first 5,000 people would have been relaxed to therapy, you know, as I now call it, which is maybe a little bit harsh. But, you know, I was in those days, I was still a scriptist. and I was doing that, you know. All I knew when I first started that I could do by rote was, okay, you're ready to be hypnotized? Yes. Okay, take a breath in, close your eyes, place your hands on your legs, place your legs and feet on the floor, and allow your eyes to close. And then close your eyes, and then out would come my script. That's right, with your eyes closed, you can begin to relax. And I was scared to put my book down. What if I forgot my words or whatever? And I think a lot of people start out like that. And they think it's got to be scripted. And it's not, don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with scripts to get you started. Providing you feel what you're reading and you're passionate about it. If you're reading it as if it's a spell, all I've got to do is read these words. That's not the right way to go about it. So I would say to people, practice on the people you care about first if you're going to do phenomena. You know, if someone at a party says to you, you know, are you, so you're a hypnotist, could you hypnotize me? Don't say, well, yeah, but you'd have to be in my room with some wow music playing and I'll throw a blanket over you, get you relaxed first. You know, say, yeah, of course I can. Are you ready to be hypnotized? And then do some phenomena, show them something. Because in those situations, if you fail, you know, they're not paying for that experience. So, and then you can get, once you've done it a few times and you know it's going to happen, and once you've failed a few times, which is even more important, and realize, like you said the other day on your, no one died. I mean, whoa, you know, so they went, boo, I'm not hypnotized. You know, okay, well, you know, move on, because, you know, it's not as if someone's died. And so you've just got to be brave about this. And people are going to want to prove you wrong, but you just move past it. Because the people you're going to affect in a big way far outweigh the one person. Because I used to say to people, in fact, I had a guy come to see me once to quit smoking. And he said, I said, you know, what are your reasons for wanting to quit smoking? No, first thing he did when he walked in, he said, this is going to be a challenge. So I said to him straight up, I said, if it's going to be a challenge, I'm going to lose. Yeah, because I'm not here to challenge it. You know, anyone can challenge me. Anyone can go, I'm not going to be hypnotized. And, it, you know, unless I sneak up on them and hypnotize them. But in that situation, someone can resist that and go, no, I'm not going to listen to you. I'm not going to do it, which is fine. But as I said to that guy, I'm not here to challenge you. I'm here to help you. And this is a collaboration. It's not me doing something to you. It's us working together to help you achieve what you want to achieve. But all of those things that panic people, what happens if it doesn't work? At some point, we have to step over that line. You know, as you know, you can see, I work out. And you mentioned the guy the other day, Tim, I think it's Tim Ferriss. He's written a couple of books, which I think are great. One is The 4-Hour Body and one is The 4-Hour Work Week, I think it is. And what he says is, if you want to build muscle, grow muscle, you have to work that muscle to failure. Because in the moment of failure, it grows. And I think it's such a great metaphor for ourselves. If we want to grow, we can stay in our comfort zone and be safe and do reasonable work. Don't get me wrong, you can do good work. But if you want to grow as a therapist, if you want to grow as a person, you have to work to failure. You have to get to that point where something fails. Because in that moment is the moment we gain that extra strength. We gain that extra knowledge. Oh, well, that failed. So now I know to do this differently and to do it in a different way. Because if we don't, we're only ever going to stay in that comfort zone. So I think it's a great metaphor. If you want to grow muscle, you have to work that muscle to failure. If you want to grow as a person, you have to push yourself to the point of failure. Because it's in that moment that we grow.
I love that metaphor. That you just gave me so much value. That is amazing. Freddie, can you remember your very first client, the very first time you went into a session with someone who was asking you for help?
The first person that I did this course, and it wasn't a very good course. It was all about analysis, so hypnoanalysis. This is back in the early 90s. And looking back at that course, it was terrible. In fact, you know, I know I've written books and stuff, but I've only ever done one course, and it was a crappy course. The rest of the stuff I've made up as I've gone along. and like a bit like, you know, like you were saying earlier about therapists saying, can I use these things from Freddie's book? Of course you can. Because most of that stuff, we all stand on the shoulders of other people. You know, I've read stuff of Erickson, and I've taken the ideas from Erickson and ideas from someone else, and in your mind they come together and you can maybe push it on another level. But we all stand on those shoulders of other people. None of this stuff comes out of nowhere. I don't believe it does. You know, it's learned over hundreds of years and passed down. And so, the course I did was terrible. Anyway, I get back, and my son, Dean, who's now 48, he must have been about 22 or 23 or something. So he went, oh, yeah, so you're a hypnotist now, are you? You know, you've been on the course. and he said, so I said, yeah. He said, well, he said, you're not a hypnotist. I said, okay, well, fine. Didn't he want to change? Yeah. So, and he was boxing at the time, and he wanted to lose 2 stone for this fight. And so I said, well, how would you need to do? He said, if I can cut out potatoes and bread. He said, I know that's what's doing it. He said, if I cut that out of my life, he said, I'll lose the weight. So anyway, at that time, because I'd been taught analysis, I laid him on his settee. So you can imagine him, he's laying on his settee. And I'm doing, you know, basic kind of hypno induction. And he, honestly, Laurie, he's doing this. He's laying there going, all the way through it. It was not like, and I just kept going, you know, and all the way through, he just smiled on his face. It's like, this is like rubbish. Anyway, long story short, I did this hypnosis, and only tool I had at that time was aversion. So I gave him an aversion to potatoes and bread. So he was married, and I spoke to his wife the next day. I said to her when I left, I said, see if he wants a sandwich. So anyway, I called her the next day. She said, he said he didn't want any. Fancy any bread or potatoes. He said, but he got a crumb on his lip and he brushed it off. you know, just the thought of a bit of breadcrumb on his lip. Anyway, long story short, he lost his 2 stone. He kept that off for ages. He had his fight. He won his fights. And he still don't think he's been hypnotized. He's still saying, no, I haven't been hypnotized. And what I was, the reason I'm telling you that is because most clients, if you're only doing what relaxer therapy or hypnotherapy without any phenomena, they're going to go out and they're going to go out, felt really nice. I don't fancy a cigarette, but I must have just been ready to change because I haven't been hypnotized. It must have just been at the right time. The weight's coming off me, but it must have just been this the right time. But if they've had an experience of hypnosis, that's what I'm saying about phenomena. And using it can be something as simple as a finger lock. And for me now, it's very simple. If I can create an emotion within you, I can give you a suggestion that's going to stick. It's no more complex than that. Do this for me, Laurie. Put your arm out in front of you like this. Right. Think about a beautiful granddaughter of yours. See her face, feel that love she feels for you, feel for her. And as you do that, Laurie, I want you to notice that arm's hanging all by itself. Imagine there's nothing you can do about that now. And when you realize there's nothing you can do about it, you can try and get it down for it goes even higher. I do not want you to pretend. Push as hard as you can for it goes even higher. Please do not pretend. Push even harder for it goes even higher. Now, something strange is going to happen. How do you try and get that arm down? How are the other ones going to go? Push even harder. Find the other one starting to lift now. Put some effort in. Come on, you're a strong woman. Push even harder. Find the other one going even higher now. But are you hypnotized? Are you in a trance? Why can't you get your arms down? Is that even your arm? You know, we're in the past, when you used to think, oh, you had no willpower about food and your hand would go out and pick the cake up, you think, well, that's my hand. No, it's not your hand. Is that even your hand? Was it ever your hand picking the cake up? No. No, but are you hypnotized? Why can't you get your arms down? I'm going to click my fingers. Your arm's going to drift down. Your eyes will close for a split second. When they open, you have a smile on your face. You may even laugh out loud because you're going to feel so great. And you're going to realize just how loved you are and how brilliant you are. As a woman, as a hypnotherapist, as a mother, as a grandmother now, get ready. Hands drifting down, eyes closing, feeling absolutely incredible. You know, so, how difficult is this? If I can evoke an emotion, it's quite simple because I know you've got this beautiful granddaughter. I know how much you love her. If I get you thinking about that girl, then I can get you, I can suggest something's going to happen next. If you come to see me, let's say someone comes to see you for smoking, and you evoke that emotion about that child, and you get, and I always say, and let that remind you of why you're here and what you're doing here today. It's, you know, they're not going to go out smoking. They're just not. Because that understanding and the fact they've been hypnotized. And so you can do this. It's not complex. Anyone can do this. The only reason they wouldn't do it is because what if they put their arm down? What if it doesn't work? You know, for me, I'm not afraid of that. You know, Melissa Tears, a couple of years ago at the UK Hypnosis Convention, she interviewed me after I did my presentation. And she said, how much of what you do you think is down to confidence? You know, because that's how it appears, I suppose. And I said, I don't consider it to be confidence. It's that I'm not worried about what other people think. I'm going to do my thing and I'm going to do it with my best intention. And I want the best for my client. I'm going to do it in that respect. And if for any reason it doesn't work, and you're not going to get 100% all the time, as long as I've done my best and I've wanted the best for that person, then that's all I can ask of myself. And so it's not so much about being confident, even though that's how it probably comes across, because I do believe that everyone can do this. It's more about the fact that if providing I'm doing my best and I want the best for my client, then that's all I can ask of myself. You know, I'm a human being and I make massive mistakes at times. But as I say to people, nowhere in my bio will you find the word saint. It's just not who I am. But I try to do my best. I try and live my life, trying to be kind. That's sort of the bottom line, really. But we have this imposter monster. We all have it. You know, I've been speaking about it. I still hear it. I've heard it in the last couple of days. You know, and I have to bring myself out of that because we all have that voice. What's the point? Why are you bothering? You know, I've been thinking out, quite a few times recently. Why am I doing all this stuff? Why am I doing what I'm doing? I could, because I'm so old, I could be sitting in a rocking chair just enjoying my old age. You know, I could quite easily do that. But I love this stuff. And that's probably why I continue to do it. And the people we meet, you know, you, Victoria, and so many great people, Jason and Ned, you know, Scott Sandlin, all of these wonderful people we meet when we do this work around, you know, I work with my son, Anthony. You know, it's just a pleasure for me to do this. And I keep having ideas, as you know. And I think, well, let's try the thanks protocol, you know, because I have a dream about Tom Hanks. And I think, right, if I can sort Tom Hanks out in my dream, I must be able to use that on other people.
I love that. For anyone listening, I want to quickly interject. So anyone whose heart just sunk when you heard Freddie say, well, what if I just go sit in my rocking chair and stop doing this? I want you to think about that. The people, there are people who you are ready to impact, who you are going to have, be able to lead into these transformative experiences. And by you listening to that voice of the imposter monster, you are selling people short. You're making people miss out on the gift you have, in the same way that if Freddie were to call it quits and go sit on that rocking chair, it would break all of our hearts, wouldn't it?
I don't know about that. But, you know, the thing that Victoria was saying, and you were saying this morning in the podcast I heard today with Victoria about this, you know, you have an ability. And one of the big things, and you will know it with the people you train and the people that contact you who are hypnotherapists, they come into it in general because they want to help, or they've been helped by hypnotherapy and they think, you know, I'd love to be able to do this for other people. So they come in with that mindset. And then to try and create a business like Victoria has, or you have, it's not easy. You know, you suddenly find you've got to let people know you exist, and you've got to sell yourself, and you've got to market, and you've got to be as good at marketing as you are at doing the hypnotherapy, if you like. Probably better than you are at the hypnotherapy, because unless people know you're there. And so what I've been saying to my students for years, when they say this and they say, you know, but I don't want to sell myself. In England, we call it blowing our own trumpet. And from kids, you're told, you know, yeah, you're very good at that. Now you have to go telling everybody how good you are at it. You know, keep quiet and then find out for themselves. And because that's how we're brought up, isn't it? You know, if you say, well, I'm really good at this, they say, well, yes, you know, just calm down, stop blowing your own trumpet. And so we grow up with that understanding. We don't want to feel like selling ourselves. But what I say to my students, I'm going to say to everyone that's listening to this, and whether it's true or not, because I'm not a linguist. Yeah, anyway, I'm not really good at languages. Yeah, that's what I actually mean. All right, so again, you can see, I say stuff. I don't know what I'm saying half the time. But the word sell originates from the Norwegian word selje. Now, I'm sure someone's going to prove me wrong on this, but this is how it's come to me, which comes from the Norwegian word selje, which means to serve. Now, if you have a product or a service, which you do have if you train to be a hypnotherapist, which can enhance someone's life, and you don't sell it to that person, you've done them a disservice. You know, when I used to have a sales company before I was a hypnotherapist, believe it or not, I used to sell things. And I used to have this sales company. And when I believed in what I was selling, and if I walked into somewhere, I would think to myself, and I'd often say it to the customer as well. I say, look, I know this product can enhance your life. If I walk out of here and I haven't sold it to you, and I haven't explained to you how that can happen, how it can enhance your life, and I walk out without the sale, I've done you a disservice. It becomes my duty to let you know that I can help you. It becomes my duty to sell you this product. Because if you're walking around smoking because you haven't heard about me, if you're overweight and you're unhappy because you haven't heard about me, if you've got a fear or an anxiety that's ruining your life because you haven't heard about me, then I am doing you a disservice. So then it becomes our duty. I'm talking about every hypnotherapist that's listening to this. No matter whether you think, oh, I'm not that good or whatever it might be, you have a duty to start marketing yourself, because there's 1.3 billion people who smoke on this planet. 1.3 billion. They say that 80% of people who smoke are actively looking to quit. That's a billion clients who are dying from cigarette smoke because they don't know you exist. It becomes our duty, as you and Victoria were talking about this morning. You know, she said, you know, she thought about quitting. And she thought, you know, that voice, go and get a job. Because, you know, someone, a mum's voice, why don't you get a job or whatever it might be. And then she thought, no, because I love this and I know I can help people. And I can either give up on this and go back and do something you not really want to do, or I can do something which is going to enhance people's lives. And it becomes our duty to do that. And once you, and it turns it on its head. The word sell comes from the word which means to serve. If you have a product or a service that's going to enhance someone's life and you don't let them know about it, or you get in front of them and you don't sell it to them, you've done that person a disservice. So it becomes your duty. So that's how I look at it. It's my duty to let everyone know where I am and what I can do. As Victoria was saying about, you know, continue to learn and continue to move on. There's this wonderful book, I think it's by John Orvidorf, which Melissa Teal was probably talking about. I'm trying to think what the book was called, but a lot of people will know it. But it's a metaphor in there. I'm sure it's in this book. If it's not, then I'll see it somewhere else. But it's one I use and it's one I love. And it's about this old woodcutter. And so he was, I suppose, a bit like me. He was at the end of his usefulness. You know, sell-by date had gone. Anyway, so but as most of us, when we get a bit older, we start teaching people. This guy was teaching young lumberjacks or woodcutters to cut trees. So they spent months learning about the different kinds of wood, the hardwood, the softwood, different kinds of trees. And one young guy, who was probably in his peak, you know, maybe 19, 20 or whatever years old, he said, it's all very interesting, he said, but, you know I can cut trees. I'm strong, I'm young, I can cut trees. He said, so he challenges this old guy to a contest of, we go out tomorrow at sunrise and we start cutting trees and see who's cut the most trees at the end of the day. So anyway, they go out into the woods and sun comes up and they start with their axes, start cutting these trees down. So every now and again, the young guy looks over and the old boy is sitting on a log, hunched over a log. And he feels a bit sorry for him. But he's thinking, well, his time's come. You know, I'm the young guy here. I'm going to just keep cutting. So throughout the day, every now and again, he looks over and the old guy's sitting on this log, hunched over. So anyway, comes the end of the day and the young guy says, look at all these logs I've cut. You know, look at this big pile of logs. And he said, I'm sorry that, you know, your time has come and I'm just better than you. So he said, well, let me have a look at my pile. So the old boy's pile's half size again. So he's far better. So he said, well, how did you do that? He said, every now and again, I looked over and you were hunched over a log. And this old boy said, yes, I was sharpening my axe. So that's a great metaphor for continue to learn, continue to improve, continue to stretch ourselves to failure. Let's push it a bit further. See, you know, when I started doing it, I was seeing one person at a time. But the way my brain thinks, you know, if I can see one person, why don't I hypnotize two people at the same time? This is back in the 90s. It wasn't being done. You know, you can only have one client at a time. You can't possibly hypnotize two people. But my thinking is, well, let's try it, you know. And then if I can hypnotize two people, what if I can hypnotize 200 people? So in 2006, I helped 5,000 people quit smoking in groups of 200 people at a time. You know, so they would come in, I'd run the same protocol as I run now, but with a group. All I changed was, if it was you I was working, say, I would say, Laurie's unconscious mind. All the only thing that changed was I'd say, your unconscious mind. That was the only difference. The protocol is exactly the same. Anyone can take my protocol and start running with groups. And I'd say, why not? Because you're never going to run out of smokers.
I think this what if question is so powerful. You know, what if I could hypnotize two people? What if I could hypnotize 200 people? It makes me think of the first time you and I spoke. You hypnotized me in my car from halfway around the world.
That's right, yeah. And I remember you said, no, I contacted you because you had a kind of allergy thing going on, didn't you? You know, your eyes were swollen or something. And you just put it out on that thing, the brain expansion group that we were in. that I ran and you were in. And so I contacted you and I said, look, if you want, you know, 10 minutes together and I'll see if I can help you. And you said, well, I'm going to see a client. And are you free at 6 o'clock? Well, 6 o'clock was like 1 o'clock in my time. So I said, well, I can make myself. And then you said, no, wait, I'm going to do it now. And give me 2 minutes. And the next time I know, you're in a car park. And I hypnotized you in your car with all the phenomena going on as
yes,
well.
That's what, when you were doing that to me a minute ago, I'm like, Freddie, you keep doing this.
But, you know, so yeah, I mean, once you let go of your limitations, once you pass that point of worrying about failure and just say, look, I'm going to help this person. And if I fail doing it, then I'm going to do it my best. And one of the quotes, I'm sure you've heard me say it before. It's a Shakespearean quote, one of my favorites. It's our doubts are traitors and they make us lose that which we oft should win by fearing to attempt. Our doubts are traitors. They make us lose that which we oft should win by fearing to attempt. How many times when we look back at our life and think, if only I just had the nerve to do it, had the nerve to ask that person out. What if I just asked her out? You know, the time's gone and they're gone. You know, you're never going to see them again. And you just think, I've just done it. Now, my son Dean, he's, as I said, he's the best man. Well, I've got four sons, but he's as good a man as I think you could meet. He's been a great son, as all of them are. But now he's got his own business, construction company, but he's also got into photography recently. So he's taken some great photographs, and that's his sort of hobby, if you like, and he's really good at it. But for my birthday, which is in a week's time, he sent me a picture of me when I was 14 with this guitar. So I've got this electric guitar. I'm 14 years old. I might post it because it's, you know, I think it's a great picture. And I was thinking about posting and just saying, what dreams did you have at 14 that you, through the imposter monster, you didn't achieve, you know? And I had this guitar, and the reason I'm telling this story, I had this guitar, it was given to me. And there was a guy, he ended up as my window cleaner, believe it or not, a guy called, I'll name him, Chinga Jeffries. But he's a great guitarist, and he plays on the cruise ships and stuff. And when he's not doing that, he's cleaning windows. And he ended up as my window cleaner. But when I was 14, he really wanted my kit, because I had a really nice amplifier that was given to me, and this guitar. So he said, why don't you try out as a singer in my band? And so I went along, and I can sing in tune. And I went along, but I was so nervous. I was so shy at that point in my life. And I regret that. I regret not just taking that opportunity. And so that understanding, how many dreams do we have that are never fulfilled because of the imposter monster that says, yeah, but what if, you know, what would they think? What will she think? What will he think? You know, what if she says no, clear off, you know, when you ask her out? All those things that go through men's minds and people's minds. You know, it is just that limiting beliefs that go in our head. I spoke to a guy who I trained, actually, and it was at a seminar that my son Anthony was running on a thing called AI, Automatic Imagination. So this guy was there, and I was there just in the audience, and we had a coffee together, you know, at the coffee break. I asked how he was, and he said, yeah, I'm pretty good, thanks. He said, but I'm still single. He said, no, I'd love to be in a relationship. So I said, well, what's stopping you? He said, well, I look at, and he pointed to a woman, it was a nice-looking woman across the room, and he said, I look at a woman like her, and I think, you know, I go across, and I say hello to her, and she'll say clear off or whatever else, and I'll be embarrassed, and then I'll have to walk all the way back over here feeling really bad. I said, none of that stuff has happened except in your head. I said, you might just be the spot-on person for her, but she's never going to know, and you're never going to know, because you've already made your mind up. You've had the whole conversation in your head in a negative form, rather than just go and say, hello, you know, want a cup of coffee sometime? What's the worst thing that happened? They can say no, and I've done that one night. You know, when I was single, I was at this pub, and there was a group of girls on this table. One of them was spectacular. So I went up and I said, you know, I think you look spectacular, or whatever it was I used at the time. And I said, do you want to go out for lunch sometime? Maybe tomorrow. She went, I'd love to, she said. But it's my hen night. I'm getting married tomorrow. But, you know, if you don't ask, you're never going to know. But, you know, and those things happen. But my attitude would be, you know, if when I was single, this was, if I saw a group of women, you know, I think, well, maybe three might like me. One won't be interested. One probably think I'm nuts. But, you know, that's reasonable odds. So I can ask. I can't start talking. But, you know, and because of that, I've known some great people, purely because I've spoken to them, where other people stand around and think, you've got no chance. What's the point? You know, what if? All that, as you say, the imposter monster in our mind, stopping us from achieving what we want to achieve. I would say to everyone listening to this, listen to the voice. The chance that's not even your voice. Mm. It won't be your voice.
Yes.
And you can do things like we were talking about the other day, change it to Donald Duck's voice. See how effective that is when it's saying you can't do something. Just change it. And we've got all these things because none of this exists outside of our skull, does it? None of it. And once you understand that, you can say, no, I choose to believe something else. It was never my belief. It was only suggested to me.
Freddie, what is something that you understand now about hypnosis that you didn't understand when you finished your training?
That's the door between conscious awareness and unconscious access, if you like, to the unconscious abilities and skills. That the ceremony of hypnosis, which is like, you know, sit in a chair, relax, close your eyes, take a few breaths, listen to my voice. The ceremony, which people expect, leads you to the portal. But for me, if you want to go through that portal, emotion opens that portal. You know, once you get people thinking about what's really important, you can do that. Today, I just got this someone who came in and had 15 minutes with me. She said there's not very many really women in the hypnotherapy world. You know, most of the big names, if you like, are male. And she wanted to be doing some of the phenomena. So I just got her to visualize herself presenting, doing some of this phenomena. That was a big enough emotional shift to put her into hypnosis. But if someone's coming to see me because they're doing something detrimental, they're smoking or doing drugs or drinking too much alcohol, eating rubbishy foods, that's detrimental to them. If I can evoke that feeling about their child and get them to understand how important they are to the people they love and get them to think about that person and then in that moment give the suggestion, either for hypnosis or for change, that's really as deep as you need to go to help someone change. So that's the big understanding for me. This, if I was to put it in a line, and I did in my book, you know, if you want to hypnotize someone, create an emotion, give a suggestion. That's as difficult as it is. When I first started, like everyone else, I was reading the words. I'm thinking, I've got to get these words right. I've got to sit quietly. I've got to do, you know, all the stuff, the body language. She's sitting like that, so I must sit like this, you know, and think and about all the intricate language patterns, which we think we've got to know. You know, I did a presentation for Adam Eason, which you had contact now because you were going to do, he runs the conference, in that big London conference, right? Adam Eason. Yeah. Great man. You know, does wonderful work, and he's got this beautiful hypnotherapy school which he's been running for years. Very renowned and well-known. And he's now a doctor. He did a doctorate in self-hypnosis, so he's now got the doctor label, and he's a great man. But anyway, years ago he said to me, can you come down and do a presentation to my students? And so I said yes, and someone asked that question, how important do you think language patterns are? I said, well, they're really interesting, aren't they, you know, the predicates and all the other words that we use to do this work, and it's really interesting. I said, but if you really know what you're doing and you really got it in your mind, you can do this. And I looked at a woman in the fourth row. She looked at me. I blinked. I slowed my blinking down. She slowed her blinking down. I faked trance and she went. I hadn't said a word. I said, where's the words? Where's the language? Mm. You know, it was my intention and I never wavered on it. My son, Anthony, he's got to know me over the last 20 years, but when we first started working together and I'd start doing distance hypnosis. You say, why do you do that in the first 5 minutes? What if it doesn't happen? You know, then we've lost the whole group. You know, why do this and why do that? When we first started running the arrow technique, he would go out of the room. He'd say, don't say you won't feel any pain. You know, don't say it, because what if it fails? Quite literally, he'd walk out because he was too embarrassed in case I've got egg on my face. Never actually happened. He's past that now. But, you know, it's just who I am. I'm just going to do my utmost, because if I can fascinate, I know fascination's akin to hypnosis. If you're listening to me to the point where you're fascinated by what I'm saying, you're in a light trance. And if I suggest, as you're listening to me, that the imposter monster you can overcome and you can deal with it in a different way, the chances are you're going to pick that suggestion up, and that's what's going to happen. You're going to look at it in a different way. So the whole thing, when we first start out, it seems complex. I've got to learn these scripts, and I just need, this is what most students do, I just need one more script.
Yep.
I just need one more induction. Now, and then I'll start. No, I just, then I'll be confident. But they one never get training, to that point.
One more certification.
One more certification. One more piece of paper that means nothing in the UK. You know, but I must do it. And otherwise, you know, I won't be able to do this work. Honestly, and I'm saying it again because I mean it. If someone wanted to be effective as a hypnotherapist, come and spend a day with me. I'll show you how to hypnotize and take someone out of fear, pain, and probably habitual behavior.
Yes.
And I say to people, learn one induction that you're au fait with. You don't need 600 inductions. One that you're good at, one that you feel comfortable with, and use it. You can use two or three techniques. You don't need a whole box full of techniques. Right. You really don't.
Right. This is so amazing. So I remember when I first read your book, I got it on Audible. And I'm so glad I did, because you read it yourself. So as I'm listening, I'm like, Freddie is about to read a hypnosis protocol. I am just going to sit and I'm going to relax and I'm going to be hypnotized by Freddie Jacqueline. And as I was listening to that book, it was fairly early in my hypnosis career, and I had some remarkable trainings. I have trained under Mike Mandel, Melissa Tears, James Tripp, some amazing people. And when I heard your book, it was like this, it was profoundly life-changing, because you simplified all these processes into something that is effective and works. And I really believe that a person who reads your book or takes a training from you is equipped to start taking action. Don't wait until you have one more thing in place. Start now.
Yeah, I mean, and like this guy today, I say he's probably a mechanic. I said to him, you don't have to have a piece of paper to go and help your wife with these techniques. You don't need a piece of paper to help someone out of pain. You know, you really don't. You don't even have to say it's hypnosis. That's the joy of it. With the arrow technique in particular, you know, because I want all doctors to start using it, you know, and I'm in talks with doctors in the UK now. Because if a doctor, and this is my thinking on this, if a doctor or a GP, you know, where they only have 5 or 10 minutes with a patient, they're really under pressure, they've got to get these people in and out. If they're giving their patient the maximum amount of painkiller they're giving them, they're still not touching their pain, why would you not, in the 5 minutes you've got, say, let's just run this, try this, because, you know, it's going to take 5 minutes. And like I say to people, I'm not giving you pills or potions. This is purely words, just your imagination. What's the worst thing that can happen? The worst thing that happens is nothing happens, and they're back where they were. But what if? And that's the word I say. But what if? I've never heard them say, well, don't bother. it's just words. It's just your imagination. But it's so powerful. The imagination is incredibly powerful. It's all we have, really. You know, I spoke to a guy today from Finland, and he's a manual migraine expert specialist. So he does this sort of cranio thing on people with migraine. And he said, I've found that a lot of my people that come and see me are suffering from trauma. He said, but there's an MD. He said, and I send him, he also does hypnotherapy. He said, so I send him to him and he has amazing results. I said, well, when you're doing your manual manipulation of their head, I said, just say to him, look, while I'm doing this, imagine you're drifting up out of your body. Imagine you're drifting higher and higher. Imagine in your mind's eye, I see a target. I said, why are you doing that stuff? I said, you could be doing this arrow technique. I said, if he does that in Finland, where no one's doing it, I said, people will think you're some kind of guru because the results you'll get, amazing. I have a friend here in this local town. She does, she calls herself an alchemist. She mixes oils, you know, aromatherapy oils and all kinds of oils. She's fantastic at what she does. And she does these massages for people. And I said to her, just run the arrow technique. If people are in pain, you're already doing the oils to try and help out the pain. So they're already in a trance because they're looking through that little hole in the chair, you know, smelling the oils, you know, and they're in a nice, relaxed state. I said, just run the arrow. She's been running that arrow with people, not saying I'm going to hypnotize. You just say, you just listen to my voice while I'm doing this and imagine you're drifting up out of your body. And these people go out with no pain. And is it the oils? Is it a massage? Who cares? But for the client, this guy has been dealing with people with migraine for 26 years. And he's used the arrow on himself and it works. I said, why don't you? The only thing that stops him is, well, I'm not a hypnotist. You don't have to be a hypnotist. I want all doctors and nurses to use this because it's only words, it's only imagination. Why would you not try it for someone? That's my feelings on it.
Absolutely. For people who are listening, I just want to interject right here because I bet there's people, a lot of people who know you and are familiar with the arrow will know what you're talking about. But for those who don't, how can people learn this amazing technique you're talking about?
Well, it's in my book. We used to say there's a separate product, which you can still buy it for, I think it's $95 or something. You can go and buy it. But we're now running an online, all our stuff's online. So you can get everything that I've ever taught. And I've had a few arguments with my son over this. He's given everything that I've learned and taught over the last 30 years. He's put on this membership site and it's $47 to join. And so you can join it and you could download everything I've ever done, learn it for $47 really, if you want to binge on Freddie Jacquin for the next few months. I think it's, and I want everyone to learn it. I want everyone to learn it. We've got an arrow app coming out, which is really exciting for me because it's already out on Apple. So you can get it on your iPhone. You can get it on your Android phone. It's a 5 or 6 minute app. So you download it, explains what you've got to do. Then you've got my voice, so you can do hypnosis. So, and you're out of pain.
I've used it myself. I used it when I had a migraine the other day. I sat down and I turned that app on and I walked through it and it's phenomenal. It's a phenomenal app.
We just upgraded it, you know, because the first one we put out pretty rapidly. And recently I've re-recorded it, so the sound's better. You can move through it easier, you know, through the actual pages. And so I think even with the first one, we had, of the 470 people who scored it at the front and the end, there was a 35% reduction in pain. When you think that, you know, most of the pills are not even touching that. And this next one is going to be even more so. So for me, that's like we're saying about the books and Victoria's book and my book and your book, because you're bound to have one soon. You've got to have one next. You've got to have that out there. But you're touching people you don't know. You're helping people you don't know. And that's what that app's doing. And it's going to, I want everyone to know how to do that. I'd love so many people just to be using it all around the world. We'll see what happens. But we're also, and this is like, we're also developing some VR goggles for kids for pain. Well, not just for kids, but we're going to aim it to start with. So, you know, a kid in pain, like say they're having a procedure in the hospital and they're scared, you just put these VR goggles, they're in their own world, going through the arrow. And I'm hoping that's going to be, you know, at some point. So there's lots of things going on. But the arrow technique is a very simple technique. For those who don't know about it, you can learn it from my book and go and practice it. Don't be afraid, think I've just read it in the book, so I can't use it. Learn it from our Jacquin Hypnosis Academy website, download all that stuff. You can buy it as a standalone product. I'm sure it's out there somewhere, me telling it somewhere. So
for for people who are listening to this and maybe, and I have a fair amount of people who have maybe come to my weight loss program and they are so intrigued by the idea of hypnosis that now they want to train, and many of these people have started training. So if someone listening to this podcast is brand new to hypnosis, why would your academy be the very best investment that they can make? Well, tell me a little bit more about what's in there.
Apart from the fact that my son Anthony and I run it.
That's all I need to know.
It's just that we've both been working hypnotherapists for the past 30 years. You know, maybe me 27, Anthony 24, 25 years, something. So we've been at the coalface, and everything we teach is what we use. It's not just we've read it in a book and we're teaching it. Everything we teach is practical. People can learn. The techniques are very simple. They're not very wordy. There's so much stuff. And Anthony, my son, is probably the most read person I know about hypnosis. He's read every book there is. But he's been like that since he was a little boy. You know, he devours books. He just loves books. And he's done that with hypnosis. So he's the most knowledgeable person I know. The other person who might match him is Mike Mandel. But Anthony's very knowledgeable. And so if people want to learn about hypnosis because they're fascinated by it, they can go and learn that. But what we do on our courses is we teach you the practical knowledge. And so you can be competent and confident and do this work and do it within weeks, not years.
Yeah. And you teach.
People can train with me one-to-one. You know, I'm doing it online. So, you know, you can go on my website, freddiejackman.com. I'm a book a few sessions with me. Tell me what you want to learn, and it'll be my goal to teach you. But once we're out of lockdown, I'm assuming that Anthony and I will be traveling again around the world, training people. And we've done it on like 5 continents. We've worked in Brazil, Australia, India. I've worked with people in Africa, America, obviously, you know, UK. So it's just for me, it's been a great trip, a great journey. And I've had my son alongside me. And some of the places we've seen, some of the experiences we've had have been phenomenal. So from a point of view of, and I don't call it a job. What I say is I qualified in the early 1990s and I've never worked since because I don't see it as a job. And so if people want to train with me, I would say, now maybe that's the difference, but I'm not going to, denigrate anyone else's work because everyone's got their own thing. But that's what I like to think. If they train with me, we know that we'll go out of there competent and confident. Because as we were saying earlier, so many people, they do these courses, and we've had it on our courses, where they come and say, I've done this course and I've done that course, but I just don't feel confident at the start. So at the very beginning of our training, and you've done some training in my presentation, I hypnotize everyone as a group. The start, so they can get in the best learning frame of mind, so they can absorb the knowledge, so they can access that knowledge easily. And at the end of the course, before everyone leaves, I'm going to hypnotize them all as a group again to give them ultimate confidence to go and use these tools. And I can't imagine why any hypnotherapy training college or school would allow their students to go off that course not feeling confident, because that's what we do as hypnotherapists, isn't it? We help people gain that confidence. To silence the imposter monster.
Yes.
And I ran this thing, which I just speak to you, I don't expect you've had time to do it yet. But although we have these negative voices in our head, by the time you get to 30, 40, 50, or in my case, nearly 70, by the time you get to that age, you've also had some really powerful people in your life, mentors, people you've learned from, people that, you know, inspired you, people that believed in you. So I have this thing, and I ran it with this College of Medicine thing that I do on a Friday. Freddie's Free Friday Therapy at 4, I call it, right? So, and I ran it last week, and I was talking about the self-sabotage voice. But I have this little thing, and I'd ask everyone to try it. If you think about, I call it sort of my war cabinet, but if you think about, let's say you had a problem. Think about the people you've met in your life that you would like, that you think would help you with that, that would have some kind of say in helping you with that. And then what I do is I go into self-hypnosis, and I ran it with this group the other day online. And what I'm telling you, if you're out there and you want to experience this, you can close your eyes and do it. But imagine just close your eyes, take a breath in, and imagine you're walking down a flight of six steps, concrete steps that lead into a corridor. And every step takes you deeper and deeper into that wonderful state of hypnosis. I can count down if you like, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And now we're in a corridor. And as you walk along that corridor, on the right-hand side, there are two doors. There are two sets of doors. And the second set of doors, as you open them, they lead into a conference room. In that conference room is a conference table. And around that table are those people that have inspired you, that are strong, that have loved you, that believed in you. People, wise people, people who have been good in business, other people who are just wise. And they're around that table. And take whatever question that's been bugging you or you want to have the answer to and put it on the table and ask for an answer and see what happens. And someone will step up and say, I think if you do this, this and this, that might work. And then someone else will say, I think, you know, if there's any fear attached to this, you can be fearless and you can do it. And before you leave that room, you will have an answer to that question. Because all of those people have influenced you. All those voices are in your mind. They're there. You've learned from them. You've spent time with them. And now when you've got that answer, just walk out of that room and just walk back up those six steps. And as I count up, your eyes will open. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You're at the top of the steps, eyes open. And you'll find that answer in your mind. It might be an hour from now or a week from now. You suddenly realize, that's what I need to do. So we all got these people we can put around that table and ask the question. We don't just have to listen to those negative voices. We can say, no, I choose not to listen to that. It was only ever someone's opinion and probably someone who wasn't even worth listening to. Whereas I have got these empowering people that I stick in this room. They're there. Some of them are dead. Some of them are long dead. Can be a granny, can be a grandfather, can be an uncle that loved you, that cared about you, can be an auntie that believed in you. You can put these people around that table and you can ask the question, whatever it is that's the problem you've got, and be determined that you're not going to leave that room until you have a definitive answer to the question. And then you've got the answer, you come back up and you'll find yourself just doing it. So that's a nice way of turning those voices. I sound like a maniac now, the voice is in my head, but turning it into a positive rather than a negative.
I love that. This is so valuable. I knew it, the instant I decided I wanted to have a podcast, I knew that I wanted you on here because you are such a voice of wisdom in all this. And I feel like if someone were to just listen to 5 minutes of this, start anywhere and listen to 5 minutes of what you're saying and actually apply it to their life, it would change their life. Do you have time for one more question before?
I'm free.
So many of the people that come to me, some of them might want to work over Zoom with clients, especially with everything that's going on in the world. We're recording this on May 27th, towards hopefully the end of lockdown. And they're thinking about working over Zoom, but they don't have this phenomenal room to sit in like you're in, or this just the right light or the right microphone, or they're wanting to be really, they're being perfectionistic. What would you say to that perfectionistic person who feels like they need to have everything just right to start?
Well, I'm going to share something with everyone now.
I was hoping you might.
I'm going to share something because, you know, people who think, oh, hey, it's Freddie, he's got a fantastic office there. You know, he must be doing very well. You know, and I'm actually in this very little room. It's like a little prison room, actually. It's maybe, I don't know, 6 foot by 5 foot or something. I'll show everyone on here. So this is going to shatter your illusions, everyone that's watching this. But here's where I'm actually sitting, okay? But it's a little dingy room at the back of my office. And I painted the wall behind me green. And as you can see the size of it, if I move the camera that way, you'll see there's a door there. If I move it that way, you'll see there's a door there. So you can see that the idea and why I love Zoom is that I can be in space. If I feel spaced out, I can be there. You know, if I want to be in America, and San Francisco Bridge or whatever that is, And the other thing is I can also use it for branding. So I can put this behind me. And it doesn't cost you anything. Or I can be, as I said a moment ago, in my posh office.
I love that.
But the joy is that we don't have to do it and that we can do exactly the same work. It took me so long because of the imposter monster to get working online. We can't possibly do the same work. You know, you can't possibly have the same effect. You're going to ruin your reputation working online and not getting results. That was the imposter monsters talking. But once you do it and you realise that you can and you're helping people today, seriously, today, I spoke to someone in Wales, in England, someone in Canada, someone in New Zealand, someone in Finland. I think it was another person in Canada. So it might be two people from Canada. Yeah. So five people today, and none of them from my little town. And none of them would I be able to get to or help without if I'd said, no, I'm not going to do this because I have to see people one-to-one to get a result. Let go of those limitations. Yes. Recognize what they are. Our doubts are traitors. And they make us lose that which we oft should win by fearing to attempt. Just have a go. You know, and you're loved. I'm loved. And with that understanding, I've got sons that love me, grandchildren that love me, woman that loves me. I can go and attempt anything and fail at it. Because ultimately, that their love's not going to change. That's how I look at this. You know, they're going to, if you have a handful of people in your life that care about you, whether you've got $2 or $2 million, and those people are going to be in your life, whatever happens, then you can go and try stuff. That's my feelings on it, you know, because then you know you're still going to be loved. And it becomes your duty. Everyone that's watching this is doing hypnotherapy at the moment, is not working online or not telling people they exist or not letting people know they can do what they do. They're doing those people a disservice. There are millions, and now we're going to have billions of people that need hypnotherapy and need our help. The medical people aren't going to deal with it. In England, if you want mental health care, it takes like a 9 months to get an appointment. You know, you've got to suffer for 9 months. When we can work on online and we can help people online, you know, things with, I always say we work with neurosis, not psychosis. But all those things, you know, anxiety, stress, fear, irrational fear and anxiety, panic attacks, habitual behaviours, including cocaine, cannabis, drinking, eating, smoking, cigarettes, vaping, all of those people we can help. And weight loss. You know, we can help people achieve what they want to achieve. And all I would say to everyone that's in hypnotherapy, I think all we can do, and I'm not saying because none of us are perfect and I'm a million miles from perfect, but I think we should all be striving to be the best we can be. So if we're going to say to people, I can help you lose weight, I can help you achieve your physical goals, I'm not saying that you have to be absolutely perfect yourself. But if you're unhappy with the weight, with your own weight, then you should be addressing it. It's because there's a lack of credibility. If I'm sitting in this chair, 5 stone overweight, and I'm saying to you, yes, I can help you lose weight, there's a lack of credibility. If I'm sitting here with an ashtray full of dog ends, coughing my heart up, and I say, yeah, I can help you quit smoking. And don't get me wrong, if you're happy 5 stone overweight, then you can legitimately sit in the therapy chair and say, I can help you lose weight. But if you're not happy at the way you are, then you shouldn't really be saying to people, I can help you achieve what you want in your life. Like Victoria was saying, you know, I'm saying to all these people, you can have abundance in your life. And there she was almost broke, you know, at that point in time, until she recognized, well, I've got to aim this stuff at myself. I've got to live it myself. And she does. And that's why I put on that little post today about you and Victoria. You are two women that walk the talk. You know, you're not just talking it, you're not just teaching it, you're living it. And that's the difference. And I would suggest to everyone that's doing this work, we are doing brilliant work. People can learn this in a very short period of time. They don't have to have 7 years of schooling to learn to be effective at this. But we owe it to ourselves and our clients to strive to be the best we can be. And as I said to you, in my bio, you will not find the word sane. I mess up horrendously at times, you know, but I accept that I'm a man and you can almost swap that word man for F up, because that's just the way those, it just goes together in most cases, right? We can try and do everything with kindness and love. That's all I say. Do our best, be as kind as we can be, and be the best we can be. That's all we can ask of ourselves.
Thank you so much, Freddie. I am so grateful for you being here today. I've been really looking forward to this, and I hope that everyone listening will look you up and will join your academy. I think that is a phenomenal deal. That's so incredibly generous of you.
Well, we're going to be running some training together, aren't we, in July?
We are. That's right. Let's talk about that.
Forgot about that.
Yeah.
And we're going to run some great techniques. And one of them is going to be a thing that no one else has done except you and I, rejuvenation therapy. How to rejuvenate ourselves, how to get back to feeling good and being good and empowering each other, empowering our clients, empowering ourselves, you know, with some of these techniques we have. And we're also going to be talking about how to put an end to your imposter monster, I believe.
That's right. You and I are even going to do a dual induction to
walk
people through a hypnosis session that lets them turn off that imposter monster voice and start taking action and start getting moving forward to their goals.
Yeah, I mean, I maybe it's a bit over the top, but I actually lead people my own voice. I place a voice in their head. I say, when you go to the fridge or the cupboard from today, whenever you're thinking about eating, you're going to hear me in your head going, why are you about to eat? Is it because you're bored, emotional, or hungry? And if the answer comes back, I'm bored or emotional, I said, you'll shut the door and do something else. So I actually put my voice in people's heads. And I don't know why we wouldn't. You know, if it's a positive voice, I say to people from today, if you ever doubt yourself, it will be as if I'm standing right next to you, whispering in your ear. You know, you're incredible. You can do this.
Yes.
And as hypnotherapists, we do that. And we have the ability to get people thinking differently. And
absolutely.
It's just a joy. And if one man can do it, one woman can do it, then anyone can do it. People look at you and they go, well, yeah, but Laurie, she can do this. And she's built this business in 3 years, you know. But the joy of what people now have, which they didn't have before you, was they have you to model. You know, before I did my hypnotherapy in my way, now people can model everything I do. And if they model what I do and they get into the same mindset, they can replicate what I do. I don't care who they are. You don't have to shave your head bald, although it would be quite nice to have an army of bald hypnotherapists following me. But you can replicate what I do by saying the same words, taking the same attitude, having the same mindset. You know, and we've spoken about this before. What I say to my students is this. When you step up to do your work, just run this little loop in your head. I care about you and I want you to be well. You know, even if it's appropriate, say it. I've said it to my clients, I care about you and I want you to be well. I'm going to do my utmost to make that happen. But if you don't feel it's appropriate, you should at least run it and keep it in your heart, because I think that makes a big difference. I've seen people that say to me, Freddie, you know, I can see you're making a lot of money. It looks really good. Teach me the words and the music. I'll just go and do this. You know, I want to earn more money. And I'm saying, well, all you're thinking about when you've got that person in the chair is the money you're going to earn, you're not going to be successful. I don't care what you say. Because in hypnosis, even if you can fool someone in a conscious state, when someone's in a trance, all of their senses are heightened. And they'll pick up whether you're there because you care or whether you're just there because it's your job and you just want to earn some more money. And I believe that. So run that, keep that in your heart. I care about you. I want you to be well. And if you are going to do some phenomena, which we were talking about originally, you know, which I'd ask everyone to try and do, and well, not try, just do it. Have some fun. But when I step up, if it's a street situation or an impromptu situation, someone says, can you hypnotize me, Freddie? This is what the loop I run in my mind. I'm a great hypnotist. You're a great subject. Mm. You are going to be hypnotized. And I keep that in my mind. There's no doubt. Because then they don't have to pick up any doubt in their mind either. If you just hold that, this is going to happen. There's no doubt in my mind. And that makes the difference. Those little voices that we have in our head, those little loops that we can run, positive loops for ourselves, in the same way as we can annihilate and disintegrate those imposter monsters. We have the power.
Absolutely. I tell people two things can't occupy the same space at the same time. So every time you hear that imposter monster voice, rather than trying to logic your way and tell it to be quiet, just start telling yourself, I'm a phenomenal hypnotist, and this person is a phenomenal subject. Fill your head with positive self-talk. Yeah. Even if you have to imagine, you know, Freddie in that other ear, it will silence that imposter monster.
I mean, you know about the thanks protocol, if you've got time, I'll tell you quickly.
I would love for you to.
I said earlier, I had this dream about Tom Hanks. I was hypnotizing Tom Hanks. I don't know why I was hypnotizing him, but I was hypnotizing with this induction that, to my knowledge, doesn't exist. It does now, but it didn't exist at that point. I woke up in the morning thinking, right, you know, so I just put it on my Facebook. You know, I had a dream about Tom Hanks doing this induction. And I said, if you're interested in learning induction, just put Tom Hanks in the box, the comment box. Well, people were going, Tom Hanks, Tom Hanks, Tom Hanks. Then someone just put his initial, T. Hanks, which spells thanks. And so because this, that's how it comes about. So because this whole thing is about self-appreciation, about self-worth, the whole thanks protocol, it just made absolute sense to call it the thanks protocol. So when I went to India last year, and my son and I, Anthony and I, we always have these competitions. Wherever we go in the world, we try so you can learn as much of the language as possible. We have this little competition between us. If it's Brazil, it's Portuguese. If it's India, like Hindi. And he'd been learning Hindi secretly without telling me so he could get a head start. So anyway, so I found out about this. So I spoke to someone. I was telling him, it's a friend of Anthony. And I said, you know, he's been learning Hindi. He's got a head start on me. So this guy said, well, you don't need to know Hindi. In fact, in India, there are 650 different languages, not even dialects, 650 different languages. He said, all you need is the greeting, which is namaste, which means, and I said, well, what does it mean? He said, it means I recognize the God within you, which I thought was a great greeting. But I'm not a religious person. So I thought, if I just change one letter, it becomes I recognize the good within you. So the thanks protocol is this. You breathe in. As you breathe out, or you breathe in or breathe out, you say these words to yourself. And you can say it to yourself. You can do it as a self-hypnosis thing. And I'm going to show you in a moment how you do it with your client. But you get, maybe you can get a group of people breathing together. So now we're all breathing together. And as you breathe in, you say these words. I recognize the good within you. Thank you. I care about you. I want you to be well. So you can use it on your own self. So if you have got an imposter monster going on, just remember the thanks protocol. Aim it at yourself. I recognize the good within you. Thank you. I care about you. I want you to be well. If you're working with a client, you can aim it at them. You can get them saying it, but you can aim it outwardly, even if it's in your own head. You know, I recognize the good within you. Thank you. I care about you. I want you to be well. So when we did this practice in India, I said to these guys who were doing the practice, you know, when we were teaching them, I said, normally, because in a practice situation, you're so intent on the words, right, I'm going to do this technique, I'm going to read these words. I said, before you even start the technique, look at each other for a moment and just take the time to recognize the good within them. Because we don't do it. We rarely take the time out to actually look at someone and recognize the good within them. There were men in that room crying, sobbing, because it's just to have someone you know thinking out of you and feeling it of you and feeling it of someone else, it's just an immense thing. And when we're in a therapy situation, I think if we can remind ourselves that we're human and pay less attention to the technique and the protocols and more to just communicating as human beings, we get a better result. So just a little thing, the thanks protocol. Run it for yourself. See what happens.
It's a beautiful, so simple and so effective. I think if people did that every day, it would change their life.
I do it when I wake up in the morning, unless I'm, of course, I'm listening to you and Victoria, as I was this morning. But I'll normally just lay in bed. And that moment before, when I'm awake, but my body's still kind of asleep. You know, so I'm sort of conscious, but my body's still saying, I don't want to wake up yet. And then I get into the breathing and I run that little loop in my mind. You know, I recognize the good within you. I care about you. I thank you. I care about you. I want you to be well. And just run it, because then you're oxygenating your bloodstream by the breathing, and you're also giving yourself some good vibes. So try it. It's only words. It's just imagination.
Freddie, right. Thank you so much. This has been an amazing experience, and I am so grateful to you.
Well, it's been great speaking to you, as always. So if people are interested in our course, have a look. I think it's going to be on your website, my website, and we're going to be training together. And I'm looking forward to that, because that's going to be the new dream team.
Yes.
The Fred and Ginger show.
Yes, we joked about that because I'm a natural redhead. So we said we're Fred and Ginger. I'm honored. I'm so excited for our training. And that's going to be a virtual training, so you can join from anywhere in the world. And Freddie, because he is so generous, has just halved the price of it. So it's going to be incredibly affordable for everyone that wants to join.
Was I drunk at the time, or what happened? No, but, you know, we want as many people to experience as possible. And
yes.
Get this message out and help people change as many people as we can. So let's see what happens. It'll be good. It'll be fun, if nothing else.
Absolutely. And I'll put all those links below the podcast, wherever you're watching or listening, so you can find us easily and start changing lives.
Yes.
Thank you, Freddie.
And remember, keep sharpening your axe.
Yes. Keep sharpening your axe. I told you it was an amazing interview. I hope you love that as much as I did. If you're a person who, like I used to be, is a little bit nervous about using phenomena because you think, what if it doesn't work? But you want to have the courage to try it so that you can use it as a convincer during your hypnosis sessions. The training that Freddie and I are doing coming up July 4th and 5th, 2020, is going to give you everything you need to start practicing and making a difference. Plus the courage and the knowledge you need to get out of your comfort zone and try it with confidence. This virtual training is going to be particularly life-changing because Freddie and I have designed it to be almost a family-like experience where you'll get to bond with Freddie and I, as well as other people from all around the world who are just like you and learning how to make a difference with their hypnosis skills. Find links to join this training below the video at trancypants.com/podcast.